Hello, everyone, and welcome to Teach Me Teacher, a podcast for educators where we, the teachers, become students ourselves. I'm your host, Jacob Chastain, and today it is my pleasure to bring you Dr. Mary Howard, and we're going to talk about professional development continuously through schools and online. All right, everybody, I am joined today with Dr. Mary Howard. Say hi, doctor.
Hi, everyone. I'm so thrilled to be here, Jacob. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You know, the season two of Teach Me Teacher we've had some insane guests. You know, we started off with Donalyn Miller, at the beginning of the season. And everyone I get is just so exciting for me because I'm a fan of everyone I get on the podcast. And I've been following you on Twitter for so long. To be able to talk to you and interview you today is a selfish pleasure of mine, really.
Well, that's a good kind to have. So thank you so much.
Yes. And I know we have so much ground to cover, so let's get right into it. Before we discuss, for anyone who doesn't know you, could you just give us a brief what you do and why we should listen to you today?
Well, I've been teaching since 1972, so I've been around for a little while. I started as a special ed teacher. I've been a reading recovery teacher. I've been a reading specialist, a reading coach. I've done learner support, done a little bit of everything. So my background has really been focused on specifically literacy, but I have a real passion for the children who are not progressing as we would hope that they would progress. So after my reading recovery training, I realized, and I think it's so important for us as teachers to realize, I realized I had so much more to learn. So I decided to go back to school. And then when I finished my doctorate, I decided that the one thing I wanted to do was to continue working with teachers and working with children. So since that time, it's been a whirlwind of amazing. And any time you can be with children and teachers is a whirlwind of amazing. Mm-hmm. I turned 67 earlier this year, and I have no intention of stopping. I plan to keep going until someone kicks me out of a school. And, that's kind of the plan I have in mind. But I think what's particularly important for people to understand is that I am still in real schools with real children on a regular basis. In fact, I adopted a school in my hometown of Tulsa, Oklahoma, about 4 years ago. And I did that on purpose because even though I spend a lot of time in schools, I needed a place where I could have a long-term relationship with teachers and to just kind of pop in whenever I wanted to. So it's really been amazing. In fact, now there are two schools. I spent this morning there. And so whenever there's something that I'm curious about, or I want to try, or I want to have a conversation with teachers, it's great to have a school where I can just say, all right, I'm coming. And it's also great, that's a two-way street. And I think this is so important. I love the idea that teachers can contact me and say, Mary, I really want to talk about such and such. And so that's an important part of what I do. The truth is, and I feel really strongly about this, at least from my own work, I can't stand up in front of educators. And I spend much of my time on the road doing seminars and working in schools. But I feel like I don't have the right to stand up in front of teachers like you and say, this is what you need to think about in your classroom. If I'm not side by side working on those things with teachers, with children, I feel like if I'm just sitting in an office somewhere and I'm thinking about it and wondering about it, that's such a small piece of the picture. I have to get out into those schools, and I have to be wondering the same thing that teachers are wondering in their company. And that's what I love so much about my work. It's in the company of teachers, not just in the solitude of doing something that has nothing to do with teachers. In fact, my seminars grow from the work that I do with teachers. So I don't sit down and say, let me create a seminar. I work with teachers and I say, this is something that I need to share with other people. So everything that I do is about children. It's about teachers. It's about, as someone who has been teaching for a really long time, it's about understanding that I'm not even a fraction of the teacher I want to be. Not even close. And you know, when you said at the beginning how much you admire these people, I'm not even, you know, I don't consider myself an expert. I consider myself a learner above everything else. And so, in spite of all the years that I've been teaching, every day I wake up and I say, what can I learn new that I didn't know before? And where are some teachers that would like to learn that with me and share their children with me? So it's really about learning in the trenches. That's number one. That's where I do my best thinking, learning in the trenches with teachers and children, and then acknowledging that I'm not the expert. I'm a learner just like you, Jacob, just like the teachers, the four teachers that I worked with today. I'm learning right alongside of them. And somewhere out there, way, 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 way far in the distance, is the teacher I'd like to be someday. I probably won't ever meet her, but I'm having the time of my life trying to get a little closer to her.
What drove this concept of you know, because you clearly have like this, you know, it's kind of like an idea, but you have this vision that of this teacher that you're trying to become, or this professional that you're trying to, this learner that you're trying to become. What drove that concept? Did that come about naturally, or did something happen to make that frame of mind click for you?
Well, I've always been curious about everything, I think. Mm-hmm. So I think I always tell teachers, if you really want to be a good teacher, let inspired curiosity drive you. Don't sit down and say, this is what I have to do. Look at children, look at your fellow teachers, and allow inspired curiosity to help you to go to the next step. And what I mean by that is that I think it's really important that when I think of something that I want to do with teachers or I want to do in my own learning, it's because I have, from the very core of my being, I am inspired by my curiosity to know more and by the fact that I will never know as much as I want to know. I think, too, that because the bulk of my work has been with those children who are not making progress as rapidly as we would hope, I would have to say that it's children who really drive me to do everything that I do. And I was not successful early in my school life. And so part of what drives me is that I want children to go into a classroom and feel joyful about the learning that they're doing. Mm-hmm. So that's probably what drives me more than anything. How can we create joyful classrooms that get kids as excited as we are? And the truth of the matter is, Jacob, if I'm not excited about my own learning and about what I'm doing as a teacher, I can't ask children and I can't expect children to be excited. I have to make sure that comes from me. I am the driver of my own professional bus. And joy better be the fuel that drives that bus, or there's nothing in my life that I'm ever going to be able to accomplish as a teacher.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a powerful message. One of the things that, you know, I've been focusing on more and more, you know, I'm in my master's programs right now, so I'm starting to think of teaching different ways. And I had the privilege of going to the Ron Clark Academy over the summer, which totally revolutionized how I thought about the way I approach the classroom and how much energy I give to my students and whatnot. But the more I think about these things, the more I think about, like, what it's empowering teachers to almost recapture that joy, because I can't tell you how many times I've been in professional development, whether it be in the district or we get sent somewhere to do something, and teachers they're beat down by the process of professional development almost. It's just like, okay, another training, you know, it's like, what are they going to tell us this time? Who's talking to us? And it's a very negative environment a lot of the times when it comes to professional development. So from your perspective, what, you know, one, why does that happen? And two, whose job is it to remedy that situation?
Well, I'll tell you exactly why I think it happens. You know, we talk a lot. In fact, Smokey Daniels, Harvey Daniels, has a brand new book out called The Curious Classroom. We talk a lot. We give a lot of discussion, have a lot of discussions about creating wonderings in our classroom and creating curiosity and allowing curiosity and wonder to inspire children to do what they're doing, but we don't do that with teachers. In other words, we say to teachers, here's what we're going to be learning. We have this little calendar and we say, we're bringing in this person, or we're doing this, or we're talking about this, but we never, ever stop and say, what do you need right now, at this moment? What are you curious about? What do you want to learn about? And that's really driving the informal professional learning that I'm doing with teachers these days. Because I think, you know, we are trying to make professional experiences about something we do to teachers instead of what we do for teachers. Mm-hmm. And if we are going to do professional learning for teachers, for you, for all of the teachers out there, then it better be about you. And you better have some ownership of what it is that you really want to learn. So for an example, when I'm working with teachers, aside from a seminar kind of a situation where they're asking me to present on a particular topic, when I'm working informally with teachers, they call the shots about what we're working on. So I don't walk in and say, today I want to talk to you about this. I say, what are your hopes and wishes for our conversation today? What is it that you're curious about? What do you want to walk away when we finish starting, or when we finish talking? What do you want to walk away and then take that seed and plant it in your classroom and make it grow? So you might say to me, I really want to do a better job of my classroom reading library. And I hope that every teacher in this country considers that an absolute must.
Yes.
Or I'm doing independent reading, but I think that I could do it better. And I think that's an important question. See, I don't want a teacher to say, I have my classroom library, I'm doing independent reading. I want them to think, what is something that you're doing, but you know that you could lift it to a whole different level? Or what is something? So one teacher might be working on maximizing their classroom library. Another teacher might be working on something else. Today, I had four different teachers. We were working on four different things. Book clubs, lucky for me, all related to actual engaged reading. Book clubs, working with children and getting them into discussions, doing the soft start, which is opening the day with independent reading, trying to get rid of the label, the levels that are on the front of books that simply, when we say to kids, okay, you're a level B, and this is the book that you need to use, we inadvertently put a little badge of dishonor on their head that everyone can see. And so my responsibility with teachers, for example, a recent conversation was about reading logs, and I'm not a big fan of reading logs, but I have to leave my opinions at the door. Mm-hmm. It's not my job to say, ew, you know, I don't think I'd do that. It's my job to say, I believe it's so important that we do what Simon Sinek says, start with your why. So I want you to tell me, what is your deepest belief about what you want to accomplish in your classroom? So if a teacher says, I want kids reading more, I want deeper discussions, then I can take that reading log and say, then we need to make sure that that's helping you to accomplish that. Because if your why is to engage kids in conversations, but your what is only having kids write down, you know, what you want them to write down, that's compliance. That's not about your why. So then what I want to help teachers to do is take that what and not say, don't do that, but all right, now, given, and we'll actually list, what are you hoping to accomplish? Now, how can we turn that what into something that will celebrate your why and not blur the lines of what you're trying to accomplish? Because you don't get it both ways. No. You don't get to say, this is what I want to do in my classroom. This is what drives me. This is what fills my heart with joy. And then say, but I'm going to do this thing that I saw online that's not going to elevate what I want to do and celebrate what I want to do. It's going to let kids think the polar opposite. So, you know, that's a big part of what's driving me right now. How can we let our why lead the way? And one of my favorite quotes is from someone named Les Brown. He says, when your why is big enough, you'll find your how. But it has to start with your why. So it's not about whether reading logs are good or bad. It's about, are they going to help you to accomplish what it is that you believe in your heart of heart, from the very core of your being, what you honestly believe and can look me in the eye and tell me is important? Are they going to celebrate what you believe is important? Because otherwise, you're only giving lip service to it. And everything we do has got to come back to our why.
How do you lead a conversation to where, you know, let's use reading logs as an example, but you can insert whatever you would like. How do you lead a conversation when a teacher brings up something like that? And you personally might not agree with what they want to do. How do you lead someone through the thought process of analyzing why they're doing something and then seeing if it's really where they want to go? What's the process that you guide someone through without just blatantly telling them what to do?
Well, the first process, and remember, we learn more by taking ownership of what we're learning than by someone telling. So the first thing is that I've got to have a poker face. You know, I can't let, and there have been times when I've had to pull off every bit of energy I have to keep my poker face. There have been times when I want to, just roll my eyes and just, but I have to have a poker face, because if I can't be respectful and try to put myself in their shoes and understand where they're coming from. So the first thing is I have to be a good listener. And I begin every conversation by saying, tell me what you value. What is it? We're talking about reading logs. So in other words, I table the conversation about reading logs for a minute. And I say, we're talking about reading logs, but before we talk about reading logs, I want you to tell me what it is that you hold near and dear to your heart, that you believe that reading logs is going to support. So we start there. And I actually write it down as they're talking. And I'm listening to, there's no better language to take than theirs. So, for example, in one of my conversations last year, during this conversation, and I'm writing down what they say, one of the teachers said, I want to engage children in meaningful conversations. There's a quote. So basically, I use their words against them. And I say, okay, let me tell you what I just heard you say. You said, and I wrote it down verbatim, I want to engage children in meaningful conversations. Now, we're going to take reading logs, and I do have them describe to me what they're thinking of. We're going to take the reading logs, and we're going to explore how what it is you want to do will help you to accomplish that. And so we take each step of it. Is so when they talk about, for example, I want parents to sign it, I come right back to it. And how is that going to help you to engage children in meaningful conversations? See what I'm doing here?
Mm-hmm.
I'm bringing it back to helping them to verbalize what it is they value. So what we do is to start with their initial plan. And I have to know, what do you have in mind? Show me what that might look like. And then we can use their what they want to accomplish as the filter through which we design it. Now that we know that, we say, okay, what we want to do is redesign this in a way that is going to, and I'll read the quote again, engage children in more meaningful conversations. Because if you're telling me that that's what you want your reading log to do, and with each part of it, I say, and is that supporting conversations? So that we together redesign it so that it will accomplish what it is they want to accomplish. You know, one of the things that I feel so strongly is that I want teachers, we've got so many strategies that are available to teachers. You know, grab that, pick and choose. You can go anywhere you want to. You can look in any book. You can go on the computer. You can do whatever you want and find a million strategies. Mm-hmm. But children don't need a million strategies. I want teachers to think more about their practices than their strategies. So strategies work the same way. If we think about our practices, for instance, I believe that we should increase the volume of reading. And again, that's one of my, if that's not one of the things that we value, then we need to have a big conversation about that. Mm-hmm. So one of those things is that I believe I value increasing the volume of reading, and therefore I need to make sure that children are reading more. It's not about the strategies, it's really about the practices. What is it? So, for example, when I said I want kids to engage in meaningful conversations, that to me is a practice. Now, whether or not the reading log is a strategy, a bookmark is a strategy, but I want the conversations or a tool that will support the strategy, but I want those conversations to be about practices. Because if we say we want to increase the volume of reading, we have to make sure that everything we do in a learning day is going to increase the volume of reading, and see if the only conversation you and I are having is that I'm going to engage kids in independent reading during the day, then I'm going to have a conversation with you about, is that enough volume? Is that the volume that's going to, Guthrie found that by grade four, in a study, by grade four, our struggling learners, our kids who are not where they need to be, or striving learners, as Stephanie Harvey and Annie Ward say, they're reading 200 to 500 percent less than our most proficient readers.
Yeah.
So if you're going to tell me that we can get 200 to 500% more reading time for children who are reading 200 to 500% less, who, might I add, may not have books at home, then we can't be talking about a 20-minute reading block or independent reading block. We got to look at your whole day, and we've got to make sure that those kids are reading in great volumes, and they're reading, you know, I see sometimes interventions where kids are barking at print, they're talking about sounds, they're making sounds, they're talking about fluency, but the one thing they're not doing, they're not reading.
Now, this is the revelation I had a few years ago when one of our reading specialists at our school, you know, me and her had these similar conversations about where we wanted my practices to go. And she gave me she gave me Kelly Gallagher and Donalyn Miller and Penny Kittle and all of these great authors. And I was like, oh, this is, you know, if I want to create readers, then my kids need to be reading. And I that weekend, I reformatted my classroom to have literature at the center. And that's been, you know, every year since then, I've been growing on this idea of building readers by putting things in front of them, encouraging good reading habits, teaching those things, letting kids explore literature, having that independent reading time with the various things that support it. But what you said is so true, and I was thinking about it as you were talking, which is we spend a lot of time talking about strategies. Almost every time, like, you know, I meet with other teachers, we focus on the strategy, but rarely does the conversation turn around to the what's our practices and how do we empower those practices? I mean, is that the right statement we should be looking at right there?
Oh, definitely. Not only how do we empower our practices, how do we, as someone who does what I do, how do we as a school or as a literacy consultant, how do we empower teachers to have the time and energy to focus on those things? Because, and by the way, every name you just mentioned are, you just make my heart sing. Every time I hear those names, makes my heart sing. You know, these are the people that I admire and respect so much, and the people that really drive me. But how can we, here's what it boils down to. There's been a very sad, in my mind, and because I know you follow my Facebook page, you know I talk a lot about that. There's been a very sad resurgence in one-size-fits-all programs, mandates, initiatives, teachers pay teachers, you name it. There's all kinds of things out there, you know, and let's just plug children into a computer and let the computer do the job that only a teacher can do. Yeah. Well, we can't talk out of both sides of our mouth, Jacob. We can't say, I want you to engage your children in those practices. Oh, but, you know, you've got to do this 90-minute program that tells you what to do because you're not smart enough to know what to do. So I'm troubled by this. I'm troubled that we're saying one thing and we're doing another. And if we really want to support teachers, instead of spending $500,000 on a Basel program, think of all the books that we could buy. Think of all the ongoing professional development. You know what? It makes my heart just joyful to go into schools. But you can't bring me into a school once a year and think that I'm even going to make a dent in your learning. If you are a principal, I would say to you, your professional learning should begin the minute teachers walk into school in the morning until the end of the day. You need to find pockets of time throughout every single day and help teachers to become their own classroom action researchers. Help, and you know, that begins with a curiosity so that we really support that.
Yeah.
But I think we're saying one thing and we're doing another, and nothing we do in this country will ever change until we understand that there is absolutely nothing that is ever going to take us to where we need to be than a knowledgeable, dedicated, joyful teacher who is going to walk in that classroom and create the joyful experiences that children need, and might I add, deserve. That's their birthright, to come into a school where we are have the freedom and the time to do the things that we need to do. And so one of the pleasures of being self-employed is that I can pretty much say whatever it is that I need to say. You know, I really worry that sometimes teachers are not invited to respectfully have these conversations. You know, so when I go to a district or I go to a school, even if I say something that they don't like, once it's out there, you can't take it back. I've been following Richard Allington my entire career. I've stalked the man for 45 plus years. I still do. I still read everything that he does again and again. And, you know, we need to be vocal. And that's the benefit of being an older woman, being self-employed, being, you know, joyfully enthusiastic. The benefit is I have no filtering system left, and I enjoy that because I think that we need to rethink the direction that we're going, and we need to give teachers the support and the time and the energy and the opportunities and the experiences that will help them to walk into the classroom and want to create the absolute best experience for children possible.
I was just having this conversation today with a group of teachers, and I was discussing how, you know, the number one thing I think that you can do to hurt a teacher's classroom is to give them check boxes they have to check in order to just operate. Like, they need to do this because this is a mandate that's brought down by this. We don't really understand why we're doing it, but you have to do this. Like, the moment you start fracturing a teacher's attention into caring about other things than bettering their classroom, looking at their student data and responding to it in a proper way, the moment you fracture that thought process with other things, I think you immediately hurt that classroom.
Yes.
Especially for teachers who, some teachers manage it well. They compartmentalize, like, okay, I'm going to get this done, I'm going to go back. But a lot of teachers can't. They worry about everything at once, and it ruins, or it doesn't ruin, but it damages their effectiveness in the classroom. And I think that's probably one of the biggest crimes that have come through education.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's so smart. The way that you said that is just so smart, that we are confusing teachers, because we're if our words and our actions don't match, then we're confusing people.
Yeah.
So we have to make sure, if we're saying celebrate your children, then we need to celebrate our teachers. And I think it's so important. And I will tell you, I believe that's why a lot of teachers are on Twitter. And might I add, 3 years ago, I was the very person that was rolling my eyes at the idea of Twitter, and when I was encouraged to get on. And I think the first day someone taught me how to do Twitter, oh my goodness, I couldn't stop tweeting. And I realized, you know, I thought, oh my God, they're listening. And I just got an answer right back. But I think that teachers don't realize, that's why many teachers are getting on Twitter, and a lot of teachers don't realize that Twitter, they think, well, Twitter is, you know, 140 characters, and it's just like, I've heard a lot of people say on Twitter, it's just, you know, nothing. No, a 140 character thought jot is going to inspire another thought and another thought, and that's where you get your conversations. Mm-hmm. So when we, every Thursday night when we have good to great chat, we're engaging teachers in what should be happening in schools, respectful conversations that allow you to allow your thinking to joyfully meander around that topic. And I think that many teachers are hungry for those kind of conversations. But I'm sad that there are still so many teachers who don't realize the power of Twitter. And that's one of the reasons why I started using my Facebook page as what I call my slow Twitter. Mm-hmm. Because I figured, well, if I can't get them on Twitter, then I'll get them on Facebook where I can say more. But it is a conversation. And teachers are hungry for conversations about learning, not conversations about stuff, not conversations about mandates or dictates, or for that matter, you know, if our conversations are focused on spreadsheets, which I think can totally blind us to the child in front of us. I'm not opposed to spreadsheets. I'm opposed to talking about children in terms of numbers. Mm-hmm. You know, I want you to use the child's name. And I always tell my teachers, for every number you give me, I want three things you know about that child. And I want you to use that child's name. And I think that this is part of the, all of this comes together because we're confusing teachers by using these spreadsheets and putting all these, you know, little color-coded things up. We're confusing teachers by saying, this is what's important, and we're losing the child in the mix. So we have to put not only our money where our mouth is, but we also have to make our professional learning revolve around the things that we're doing. Do we need to look at numbers? Sure we do. George Kuros had a great post today on the importance of using that information to inform, but we're not using it. And this is what makes me so sad. We're not using spreadsheets to inform our practices. We're using spreadsheets to label our children. Mm-hmm. And if we don't stop labeling our children and we don't start celebrating them as learners with everything that they bring to the learning table, we're doomed.
I totally agree. You know, it's the starvation for what educators want to talk about is one of the reasons I made this podcast. Like, you know, this has grown into something, you know, with an audience around the world. But at the beginning, it was just me doing it because I was talking to teachers at my school and in the district. And I was like, man, people have really great ideas that we never get to talk about because our school meetings are based, you know, we're just learning about whatever thing we're forced to do. PLCs are inevitably about data, you know, or looking at certain data or vetting tests or something. We never really get to the fun part of the education. I was like, I want to do a podcast where I get to highlight the cool stuff that I want to talk about and learn about. And then, and that grew because people, you know, the teachers started spreading it and they were like, hey, there's this conversation happening on this show. And that's why the podcast keeps growing and I keep getting different people on, is because we've gotten to education for a reason. Most of us got into it for a love of learning, a love of children, a love of anything in that realm. And that drives what we got into, but somehow that gets muddled every once in a while and we forget, like, why are we here? You know, this job is way too hard to forget the why, because if you forget the why, then it becomes something that it shouldn't be. You lose the fun, you lose that energy, you lose this passion that is unlike any other profession out there.
Oh, yes, definitely. And what you're doing is such a service. And let me add, I was thinking as you were talking too, what you and I are doing right now, which is having a conversation, mm-hmm. not having an agenda. There's not an agenda today except just to share what really drives us as teachers. Yeah. What we're doing right this minute, and you said it, teachers are hungry for it. This is what we need to embrace in our schools. We need to allow teachers to have these kind of conversations. Now, as a teacher all of my career, I looked for my professional posse. I've been in schools before where, you know, everything that I shudder about now as an educator, I've been in those schools. But man, I had professional posse radar. I could go into a school building and man, I could connect eyes with you and go, he's on my posse. And we would get together and we would sit down and talk about teaching. So as many teachers are in schools that are not getting what they want, you know, I tell my teachers, you can't wish for what you don't have. You need to go out and find it. Mm-hmm. It is your responsibility, whether it's Twitter or Voxer or Facebook or the teacher next door or a corner curled up in your classroom, you have a responsibility. So if you're not getting the professional learning you need, you better get up off your seat and get out there and find it. Because yeah. we are lucky to live in a world now where professional learning is everywhere we turn. I can wake up, and I should be embarrassed to tell you I do this, but I'm not. I can wake up at 2 a.m. and get a professional itch and flip open to Twitter, and I can learn something at 2 a.m. that sometimes gets me too excited to even go back to bed. So we, you know, as much as I want every school to celebrate the kind of conversations that we're having right now, mm-hmm. and the conversations that I seek out with teachers here locally, we have two choices. We can sit back and we can whine and we can complain and we can say, they're not giving me these experiences. Or we can do what I do and what many, many other teachers do, and we can go find it. We can go on this, you know, magical journey where we're going from place to place looking for places to fill our professional soul with not only knowledge, but with joy and enthusiasm and heart, because that's what we bring back into the classroom. And I think that's an important message for your audience to understand. You don't get to complain if you're not going to take the steps to find your own journey to your own learning. And you get to be the driver of that bus. And if you do, then joy can fuel you too.
There's a lot more coming with Dr. Mary Howard. Stick around for part 2, coming at you in 2 weeks.